Listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Hey, you're listening to Free City Radio. This is edition 304. And on the broadcast this week, I'm going to be speaking with Berlin-based filmmaker Margarita Jimeno. Margarita speaks about a number of her projects that I think depict an interesting contemporary cinema take on life in Berlin. She talks about earlier work, including Grind, Reset, Shine, and also the more recent Atalanta. These works, I think, depict the changing economic and cultural landscape in Berlin, a city that for many years was seen as a creative center for artists to produce and create work outside of the strict confines of market economics. And this is visited in Margarita's work. So this conversation talks about Berlin as it's changing today, 2025, 2026. We're seeing the city becoming more unaffordable, realities of gentrification, the changing landscape. Now, this is, of course, a dynamic that's happening internationally with both housing crisis that is facing artists and many communities, of course, in Berlin, but also around the world. And I thought it would be interesting to both highlight Margarita's meaningful cinematic work, but also talk to her about her perspective as an artist today living in Berlin. So here's our conversation for Free City Radio.
So my name is Margarita, and I'm living in Berlin for 5 years. And before, I was mainly living in New York City. And I have been trained really as a fiction director in New York City. But when I came out of film school, I pretty quickly got a job in documentary filmmaking. And from there, I made my first documentary feature film on a band called Gogol Bordello. And from there, I jumped to do my first fiction feature film, which is a combination of using non-actors and actors and mixing them with real people who play a version of themselves. And I think this is that film was more where I could find some kind of voice in between the fiction and the documentary, weaving of, you know, formats, how you film something that is real with a fictional character. And I think I've just realized after making that film how you can really play with storytelling, and that storytelling is not only what you write on the page or what you film in front of your camera when you're doing a documentary, but that you can actually mix so many things. So my overall, I feel like it's like a journey that I'm on with when making films. Sometimes it's just a question of the format in the last years. And my way to arrive to Berlin was because I was doing a master's in theater, in performance making in Goldsmiths in London. Because I was also interested to experiment with this. How can you experiment also with walking into a room and telling a story, not only in a visual format, but with sound, with the objects that you encounter? So that's what led me there. And because it was pandemic, I came here for the summer, and it's been a 5-year summer in Berlin. And I'm still today and the years that I've been here kind of experimenting a little bit with what is storytelling and where can all these things that are of interest, which is, you know, creating worlds, you know, world building, working with actors, working with non-actors, and telling stories that are deep, that are not just about superficial things, you know. I think this has been the challenge
In a way, I saw that Berlin or some elements of the city were a character in your film. The sort of landscape of the city was playing a role, and sort of, you know, Berlin is a city that has a lot of contradictions because it's a very privileged city. There's a lot of wealth. It's a major capital of Western Europe. But there's also this other history to Berlin where you have, you know, very visible relics of a totally different era, the Cold War, and then all the sort of physical infrastructure that still remains in some cases from that time. So that sort of brings up a lot of contradictions around discourse of the idea that a city is shaped consistently by how we understand the past and how we live in that city in relation to the past. And there's obviously a lot to Berlin's past. So maybe you could talk a bit about the idea of the city as a character in that film, in various ways the people in the film are interacting with.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I made the feature film, I was not living in Berlin. And so I kind of didn't have the same connection that I have to the city right now. And one thing that coming, spending time here and coming from New York City, really, like that's, it has been the city where I've lived the most of my life, New York City. So it's the one reference that I have, is how they dealt here with the history and also the scars of what happened here. So you know, you really start to wander around, and you really quickly, if you just notice the pavement and the walls, you really quickly start to see that there are plaques everywhere where Jews were taken, that there are bullets on buildings that were not fixed, that they are places that are empty because they were bombed. And also, I moved this year to the center, and this place in Kreuzberg, this is the place that was mostly bombed. And you really see really all beautiful, you know, turn of the 19th century buildings, but then you see all this new architecture that has nothing to do and kind of like a mismatch of things. So this is very interesting as a city that keeps the scars visible. I think coming from New York City, you know, with 9/11, of course, I mean, there is a monument. I don't know if it's called a monument. I'm sorry if you refer to that. Yeah. But, you know, where the World Trade Center used to be, there's now a monument. And it kind of deleted the scar in some ways for me as someone who lived through that. It is beautiful and it's very touching. And you do see, you kind of just see in the World Trade Center now, there's like a, if nobody has been there, there's a square that was built, but you know, it's very clean, you know, they didn't leave any residue of things that fell, things that were wounded. And so it's very kind of clean. I don't know how else to explain it properly. And in Berlin, you really feel it. They want you to know that there was bombing here, that, you know, something wrong happened. And of course, like I was saying, when I made the first feature, Grand Reset Shine, I was seeing the city really from another perspective, and on using Berlin as a character. I always used locations as characters precisely because of the scars that every city has, even if they're invisible, or if they're visible, like in the case of Berlin. It's always very interesting to me that, you know, the ruin of a city is also part, even though it's not a ruin exactly, but the idea of a ruin meaning a place where many, many people have lived, or many, many animals, or there has been life for a long time. It carries a character that it's its own character. So whenever I'm planning to film, a new film. I also take care of places that, you know, say something without words, just by being in the background or the people that have a relationship with that. In the case of the Grind, Reset, Shine film, for the main character, it was the place where he was going to come back to Europe, and the place where he thought that he's going to have the time and dedication to work on his career. But in the end, it doesn't really work out, and everything that is surrounding the city is kind of like the beginning of the decaying of this kind of economical hardship of working as an artist and not working as in a regular job, and what is, you know, the question for this person and to many artists, how to live in harmony with that. Can you have like a daytime job or and then do your practice, you know, when you have free time? And is that okay? It's a question for many people. Or you want to really try to, you know, live in residencies, and then you don't have to pay for the full rent. You know, like it's kind of something that a lot of people juggle with. And then, of course, even if you are in a gallery, maybe the gallery owes you money. So then it's like you're always in this economic battle with yourself. And in Grind, Reset, Shine, you see a Berlin that it has these very DIY spaces, art spaces, which I understand that a lot of things were closed because of after the pandemic, a lot of things did not survive. So right now, if you would watch Grind, Reset, Shine, there are many things, and things that I didn't include also, because we filmed in a documentary style, with the main characters being the fictional characters. So we just dropped in different situations that were real. Everything that had to do with the art world is real, but the main character is fictional. So all those places, a lot of them do not exist anymore. All these people have moved away. And in some ways, it has become a little bit more commercial, in the sense that, you know, the rents have gone up, the costs have gone up, and there is a lot of speculation with, you know, construction and charging or, like, you know, cashing in on all these people who are coming here to have a cheaper life, but then they still end up paying really high prices for the cost of living because they're not locals, and it takes a while to learn that, oh, you actually have rights. It's not like in New York, that if you're a renter, you almost have no rights over nothing. So yeah, this is the story of how the city talks in the film Grind, Reset, Shine, and specifically about the Berlin. Maybe right now is more like a time capsule.
Thanks so much for sharing those reflections about Grind, Reset, Shine, and, you know, talking about the landscape of the city, Berlin, and also your reflections on New York City. It's interesting that you mentioned this idea of the city as a character, and also the political decisions around how to deal with the past, right? And how that plays out in different cities. The short film that you worked on most recently is quite different. I think there's a sort of aspect of people being haunted, or there being some sort of you know, open question about how people interact with reality. There's this clear reference also to Berlin, obviously, and the locations for the film?
Yeah, so Atalanta is an experiment with mixing a myth, the myth of Atalanta, and mixing kind of a fascination with demons and also contemporary conversations. And we filmed in a very interesting place, which is all the way in the East Berlin near the, I think this is a Korean market. It's in the Korean market area. And these towers where we film were going to be demolished by the city. But this architect firm found out that they were going to do that, and they bought them because they had the money. But it took a long, I think many years to renovate them and to put them up to code. But they were basically just used to keep materials in them. So nobody ever lived in those towers. But this architect firm has a very also unique way of approaching buildings and approaching the past. And actually, my friend who works there, who's the main architect, one of the main architects, he actually has a project now in Europe where they're trying to get a legislation in Europe not to demolish, but to renovate all buildings, because this is why the costs of living go so high. And it's very anti-ecological. So, of course, having a tower as a character is... it has, of course, this eerie feeling. And they made a garden in between the two towers. So it has like a feeling of ghost, kind of like the ghost of the past, another-worldly... atmospheric place, you know, that it was East Berlin where nobody really went. And interestingly enough, if people know, I mean, I guess you need to live in Berlin a little bit, but I think most people know that those towers are right next to the Korean market, and that's the first place where all the Korean immigrants were coming to Berlin, that area. And the food trucks are all Asian, you know, Southeast Asian food and things like that. So yeah, I forgot the question, but that's basically also why I chose it. It has to do with a kind of like a mythological ruin that comes from another era, really, and that is used in another way, right? Because of course the ruins are not used today as they were meant to be used in many places that exist. And sometimes they're just, you know, closed off because they're so delicate.
So maybe for those who just heard what you said, thanks for sharing those details about the location. Atalanta, can you tell us more about the sort of mythology that you're referencing and how it played out in the characters in your film?
Yeah, so I can read you the summary of the Atalanta. It's a Greek myth, and Atalanta was abandoned by her father in the forest because she was a woman and not a man. It was not a son, it was a daughter. And she was raised by a she-bear. And as she was growing up, she became like a skillful huntress, and she always pledged her virginity. So for the Greeks, virginity was not what is meant for us. In the old times, when you were a virgin, you were conserving your energy, you were conserving your dependence for using this to do other things. So in that sense, the Greek were talking about her virginity, to keep her virginity. And her father found her when she was already grown up, and he realizes that she's such a great huntress, and so now he wants to reconnect with her. And then he tells her, don't worry, you know, like, I can get you a husband in no time, but she doesn't actually want to get married. And then they make a game, and they said, well, okay, find me some suitors, and if they beat me in the hunting, I'll marry them. But she already knew that nobody's going to really, you know, beat her because she's so good. So she was just kind of playing with that. And so there is this guy called Hippopemenus, and he goes to Aphrodite, and he's like, oh, can you please help me? Because, of course, I'm not going to be able to beat Atalanta because she's very good. Can you just help me in the race and see if she will, you know, she will lose, like, and she can, I can marry her because I really like her. And Aphrodite, yeah, sure, like, doesn't go ahead. And then when they're doing the race, they start by running. Aphrodite, she drops golden apples, and then Atalanta is surprised, and she stops and she looks at them, and then that's how Hippomenes like wins, and they get married, and she loses her virginity, but they have sex in a temple that is forbidden to have sex in, and so because of this they didn't respect this temple, so they are sent out to this other world, and they are transformed into lions. And so this, actually, this painting of the lover lions and, you know, lion and lioness are represented in many paintings. If now that you know about it, now you will notice. And this is both of them. And so some people believe that this is the, you know, became the eternal symbol of the consequences of indulging in forbidden desires. Or the opposite, that actually, because they went into the forbidden desires, they live on in the forbidden desire, therefore they're having a great time. So that is the myth of the Atalanta. And I was just experimenting with that, and experimenting with a basketball player. And the basketball player is Atalanta, and then the father is kind of more like a demon. And in between those moments, different people that are local to Berlin come and ask things to the demon, who is kind of like a god, and he's listening to everybody's requests for help. So yeah, that is kind of the mixing of these two stories.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Margarita. And of course, you know, we'll share your website for people who hear this, if you're tuning in on FM or AM radio in Canada, you can hear this interview again, or also visit the program. Just search soundcloud.com/freecityradio for the archives. Maybe just back to your larger practice, Margarita. So you're working in this sort of film context where you're experimenting with city landscapes, characters, mythology. As I mentioned earlier in the conversation, this requires an active collaboration with many different artists to make the films possible, but also the conversations that lead to the projects, you know, the exchanging of ideas. Berlin right now is going through a lot of changes. There was a quite significant period of time where Berlin was very accessible for artists because of the cost of living, and also it was a city where you had people from many places. You still do, of course, but that's changing. There's a lot of gentrification and challenges that independent artists are facing. So I'd love to hear about the community role in your projects, and also how that relates to some of the challenges that Berlin is facing right now.
In terms of the Berlin changing, yes. I mean, even since I arrived here 5 years ago, there's been a very big change post-pandemic. And I mentioned it a little bit before, but I think right now, if you watch Grand Reset Shine, you will see that it's a time capsule, that many of these places have closed, that people have moved on out of the city. And it's also worth mentioning that it's good to think about other ways of engaging yourself with housing. I think housing is a big question, not only in Berlin, I will say. It's also a big question in New York. And when you go even to other cities, like I grew up in Bogota, in Colombia. And when I go there, nothing of my memory as a child really exists. So it has been really completely bulldozered and only for profit buildings, nothing to do with anything with the city. And I think in Europe, people fight more hard on this. So I am actually hopeful that, especially with the campaign that some architects are doing in Europe to, you know, to have this law that helps people renovate buildings, because this will really lower the cost of having new housing. And it's kind of hard sometimes, I guess, to fight against all these multinational entities that they want to just invest in these buildings that nobody lives in and nobody really who lives in the city can afford. So then you have all these foreign people owning buildings just to have some money saved for retirement. It's just like the logic doesn't really match the necessity of the local people. So this really has to be just dealt at the level of government. But I think there's also a lot of beautiful projects. There's actually one historical project I think around Europe, but I know for sure in Germany and the Netherlands. It's called Babelgruppe, which means I think it's like a building together. And this is a building that many people can co-own, so then it becomes very cheap. But you have a social element to it. So then you, for example, the building where I'm living now is like that. I don't own it, but I'm subletting there. But there are people there who are artists who cannot afford to buy something, but they will always have their apartments at the price that is okay for them, and they will never be able to kicked out. And then there's also people who live in the building. In my case, they that are deaf people. So then it really involves a large amount of people who are very different, but they're all together in this building. And I think this is a beautiful project. And many people can join those kind of projects and build around Germany and the Netherlands. But of course, they're hard to find and there's not that many. So maybe everybody needs to kind of join together and start making more of those kind of groups in relation to especially in the US. You know, it's very difficult in New York City. You know, some people can hike up your rent in New York $700 all at once because they can. You know, there's no one stopping them.
This reality of, you know, rapid gentrification and the whole process of, you know, demolition of the past speaks to also the idea of the city as holding a character or not. You know, you talked earlier in our interview about the ways that the 9/11 memorial site is commemorated in this very, very slick way that does not get into the complexities of that event and who was impacted by it. Of course, many migrant workers died on 9/11. Nobody, of course, in the presidential administration of George W. Bush died at the higher levels of power. So there's always these dynamics around how cities are remembered and how events are remembered. It's really interesting to hear your insights around different initiatives in Europe and the challenges around housing that speaks to this broader theme in your work of thinking about the city as a character, as a living process also. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak today, Margarita. That was a conversation with Margarita Jimento. I'm Stefan Christoph, and this has been another edition of Free City Radio. We air weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m., on CGLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m., on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m., on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m., on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m., on CGSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m., and on CHMA 106.9 FM
FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will speak to you next week.